Once, just as I was getting out of my yellow cab, the taxi driver asked me, "Are you a waitress?" There are few things that will slow any New Yorker's curbside exit, but this question was one of them. The driver had already given me my receipt, and my hand was on the door handle when I paused to answer him. "No," I said slowly, trying to gauge the origin or perhaps motive of his questioning. Did he have me confused with someone else? "I'm not a waitress. I was a waitress a long time ago, but I'm not a waitress now." "That counts," he replied. "Usually when I get a big tip like that, it's from a waitress." It's odd, I don't remember what the exact fare had been or the tip, only that I had not considered it big at the time. He was not, to my recollection, an especially good driver. To be fair, though, I was not an especially good waitress. At the time that I waited tables, I jokingly called myself the world's worst waitress. Admittedly, it was hyperbole for humor. I was not the world's very worst. I was probably in the bottom third of the world's waitresses. I was evidently embarrassed by that fact because I was used to being better at things. Almost everything in that restaurant confounded me. The rage-prone cook in the back kitchen smashing a dish every time an order came back wrong. The absentee owner who was somehow continuously in the process of hiring a new manager. The casual sexual harassment by customers. The hostesses with chronic childcare crises. They seemed to conspire against me every shift. The chaos proved difficult for me to manage, and I marvel, honestly, that I made any tips at all. If I had a nice night, that was probably because I had a handful of generous tables. Honestly, I did not like how much help I needed week after week, month after month. One despairing weekend, I tried to divvy up my tips and distribute them among the rest of the wait staff, which, much to their credit, they refused in horror. When I protested that I had not earned my keep during a particularly harrowing shift, they told me it was all right to have a tough time now and again. So my stint as a waitress was an intensive education in all kinds of generosity. In his book, Give and Take, Why Helping Others Drives Our Success, organizational psychologist and university professor Adam Grant observes that givers and takers differ in their attitudes and actions toward other people, with givers striving to be generous and sharing time, energy, knowledge, skills, ideas, and connections with people who can benefit from them. While the majority of people are givers in their personal relationships, the majority are not in their professional lives. In workplaces, only a quarter of people are definitively givers, Professor Grant estimates, while about a fifth are takers. The remaining majority are what he calls matchers, people who modulate their styles of social interaction for reciprocity, blending giving and taking to match their perception of the dominant style around them. Differentiating between our giving and taking, Professor Grant asks, do we try to claim as much value as we can, or to contribute value without worrying what we receive in return? In every known culture, we humans engage in a range of giving, taking, and matching. Although most inhabitants of most countries endorse giving as their single most important guiding principle, he notes. Additionally, when we reflect on our guiding principles in life, many of us are intuitively drawn to giving. In general, we all want to make valued contributions. What sometimes prevents people from giving wholeheartedly, though, are certain anxieties, fears of being exploited or judged by others as weak or seeming naive can keep us from owning our noblest inclinations. Expecting the worst from others can actually lead us to embody it ourselves. One of my favorite New Yorkers often confessed her worry that she would be mistaken for a so-called sucker chump because of her generous tendencies in a dog-eat-dog city. Yet, as Professor Grant contends, giving can be more powerful and less dangerous than most people believe. Do we know what we believe about giving ourselves? As the Reverend J. Rowland reminds us, holding on too long or too tightly is never good for the soul. If in organizational life, the representative 3/4 of people are customarily behaving either as givers or matchers, pronoia begins to replace paranoia, Professor Grant explains, and we begin to think that people are for us instead of against us. Often, they are. Thankfully, giving types tend to congregate in faith communities. When they do, they start to resemble the hero, that Sudanese folktale we heard during our time for all ages this morning. And they bend the road toward generosity, altering the course of a whole succession of lives. We, of course, have variable capacities in varying phases of life. That is a given. But what we make of our individual givens is ultimately what matters. When I waited tables, I was young and inexperienced in most things. I had limited financial resources and I worked 7 days a week. I lived rent-free with family friends. At that point, I was not in a position to be generous. Rather, I was in a position to receive generosity. That was my job. These days, though, I can afford to be more generous, considering that congregational trio of T's that Loie mentioned in her reflection, time, talent, and treasure. I see that I am in a position to give all three myself, but that will not always be the case, and when my circumstances change again, I will aim to give what I can. Generosity is not about how much we have compared to others, the Reverend Kirk Lodman Copeman states, but about how much we can joyously share with others. One of the best things we can give each other, obviously, is joy. When we share it, we grow it. Every one of us comes out of our singular existences hoping to create a common good where we can be enlarged by our encounters with one another. It is the heart that does the giving. The fingers only let go, one Nigerian proverb declares. The routine practice of giving to each other exercises our hearts. It asks us to open them when they are closed and to develop the strength and determination to keep them open a while longer sometimes than is comfortable. Giving is much greater than matching. Bolder and infinitely more imaginative. Givers succeed in a way that creates a ripple effect, enhancing the success of people around them, Professor Grant reports. He has noted that we can tell a lot about people's attitudes from how they treat their wait staff and car drivers. Our own attitudes are included here. Wherever we are, however we got there, we have to remain clear about our own identities and intentions, regardless of what we face moment to moment, so that we can live into our best selves. Remember, we are people of faith. We would be givers who display a generosity of spirit in sharing our time, talent, and treasure with those we know personally, but especially with those we do not. The life lessons I've learned from cabbies and waitresses are legion. And if I am ever confused for one or the other, ever again, I promise you I will have the good sense to take it as a compliment.